Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel and Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel and Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
What a great track that is. Oh, that's really loud, isn't it? Don't know what happened there. Oh, is that a bit better?
Yes.
My word. Welcome to the Live Sounds Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science, you know, it's different forms. Every Saturday morning, 11 till 12. You've got Julie and Paul here live in the studio here on Paternoster Road, opposite the Hubs, if you know where that is. Later in the show, we'll be talking to our PG. Who knows what he's going to be talking about? Could be something to do with space, maybe. This Saturday, as a one-off special, we've got a guest interview with Paddy Vesey. He's going to be talking about mental health. He's also a presenter on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. He does a show on Thursday evening, 6 till 7, called The Bike Room. And very good it is too. Next Saturday, and indeed every first Saturday of the month, all being well, it's Phil Muffett from the Maxwell and Swinton Astronomical Society doing his general astronomical update. And the skies have been quite interesting these last few weeks, so I'm sure he'll have lots to tell us about. Before that, on Friday, what's starting at the Millennium Gallery?
Yes, it's the Sheffield Photographic Society Perspectives Exhibition. Sorry about that. 2024. I can't say that. And that's free. That's in the Sheffield Winter Garden from 12 noon on Friday, the 1st of November, until 3 p.m. on Sunday, 10th of November.
It's all good stuff. You'll see a great range of exhibits from members of the Sheffield Photographic Society, of which Gareth Morgan is a member. He's also ex-president, and he's generally our guest speaker every third Saturday of the month. Next up, I'm going to be talking about leaf moulds, and it's very timely because I think the leaves are all of a sudden deciding to drop. So you can collect leaves for leaf mould, but first, some commonly asked questions about this magical substance. So what is it, firstly? Leaf mould is crumbly brown organic matter made solely from decomposed fallen leaves. Its sweet smell reminds you of a walk in an autumn woodland, and it's also very useful in your garden. So why is it useful? So although it's low in nutrients, it retains moisture well, acting like a sponge to hold water around plants' roots. Conversely, it also lightens heavier soils by creating tiny air pockets that aid drainage. So leaf mould is useful for peat-free gardening, which is all in vogue at the minute, especially for making potting compost, as it contains fewer weed seeds than normal garden compost. So how do you use it then? So add leaf mould to borders as a thick mulch, which is about 5 to 8 centimetres deep, or fork it through soil before planting. Use well-rotted leaf mould instead of bulk compost for sowing large seeds such as peas and beans. And a good potting mix for containers is equal quantities of leaf mould mixed with sharp sand, garden compost and good quality garden soil. So which leaves are suitable, do you think, then? Leaves of deciduous trees, which ones that lose the leaves in autumn, including oak, beech or hornbeam, make excellent leaf mould, breaking down in 1 to 2 years, so it's not a fast process. Thicker leaves such as sycamore, walnut and sweet chestnut take longer. Conifer and pine needles are useful, creating an acid mulch for herbaceous plants such as azaleas, but they need to be rotted down separately because they take up to 3 years to rot down. And avoid using leaves from other evergreens such as holly, cherry laurel, camellias and rhododendrons because they don't break down as easily. Finally, so how do you make it then? Chop thicker leaves in a shredder or mow over them and collect them in the grass box. Placed in Hessian sacks or used compost bags, pierce a few holes in the base and loosely tie the top. Water leaves if they feel dry and shake bags occasionally to introduce air and help fungal decomposition. So get collecting your leaves.
Find myself beside a stream of empty thought, like a leaf that's fallen to the ground, carried by the flow of water to my dreams, and woken only by your sound. Alone I've walked this path for many years, listen to the wind that calls my name. Trees of yesterday look so sad, wait your breath of spring again. Far beyond the hills where earth and sky will meet again, a shadow's like an opening hand, which hold the secrets that I've yet to find.
Interesting track there by Wishbone Ash. I've never heard that before. Leaf and Stream. And we played that because we're talking about making your own leaf mould. How cool is that? You might have to wait for a few years before you can use it, though. All interesting stuff. You are listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, talking about science in all its different forms. Next up, this caught my eye and I thought it was an incredibly interesting story. Brewer makes beer with leftover pasta. Get this. In 1921, Luigi Ugo left his home in Tortona, Italy, and headed to London, where he opened a tiny delicatessen, a hole in the wall on Gerrard Street in Soho. It soon became a thriving business. Passers-by were intrigued by the fragrant smell coming out of one of the first shops in the UK to sell fresh pasta. A century later, his great-grandson, Freddie Ugo, has achieved another first, developing the only beer in the world that is brewed from leftover pasta. So my great-grandfather came to England at 14 by himself, he said. He was a servant boy before setting up a little place, making pasta in the window, and my family has been doing that ever since. Now, Freddie Ugo is a great-grandson of that Luigi Ugo, said visitors to his brewery, called Beyond Belief, Visitors that stall he had at the London Craft Beer Festival drank about 1,500 pints of beer in 2 days. We had the most footfall of any brewery there, he said. I've always been interested in sustainability and I wanted to find a unique solution to tackle the unavoidable waste in our supply chain. The company has made brews, including a Vienna lager and an IPA with fusilli, penne, spaghetti, gluten-free pasta and even vegan pasta. So the idea for the beer came in early 2021 when Freddie Ugo, his brother and some colleagues started thinking about how to manage their family company's own food waste. They soon realised that the starch from the pasta waste could be used for alcohol. Blimey. Assuming it would fail and unable to invest in any large-scale equipment, they spent a day boiling surplus pasta in pots and pans in the company's test kitchen. We wanted to see if we could make a homebrew using pasta instead of barley. After boiling it on the hob, we let the liquid ferment in an old ricotta bucket that we're using with a bit of cling film on the top to cover it. Real hands-on grassroots innovation, but it worked. They then purchased a full home brewing kit before approaching two larger UK brewers with fermentation vessels of 2,000 to 3,000 litres. There was a lot of trial and error, Freddie Ugo said, especially as the pasta often coagulated, damaging the machinery. After securing a grant from Innovate UK, this year, they used the funding of about £350,000 to buy their own brewery in Hertfordshire and invested in a different technology to prevent coagulation. Now, the company holds a global patent for its method of making beer from leftover pasta. Check it out. Freddie Ugo, beyond belief. Amazing. Oh, brilliant. That was Rather Have a Beer, or RHAB, by Loose Articles. That was one of our PG's Pick of the Rocks for Glory Days a while ago. But we thought we'd play it because we're talking about a brewer that makes beer with leftover pasta, and that's Freddie Ugo, and the company's called Beyond Belief. Amazing. Check that out. Anyway, if you've just tuned in, you're, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. Paddy's arrived. Our guest speaker is in the house.
He is.
Talking later about mental health.
But he couldn't get into the house.
He couldn't get in to his own house. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, next up, we've got this week's environment update.
Right, Living Planet, in their biannual Living Planet report published last week, the Worldwide Fund for Nature, WWF, and the Zoological Society of London have warned that average wildlife populations have fallen by 73% in 50 years, and that what happens in the next 5 years will determine the future of life on Earth.
Ooh. I know.
According to their report, which provides a comprehensive overview of the state of the natural world, human activity is continuing to drive a catastrophic loss of species. The report is based upon a Living Planet Index of more than 5,000 bird, ant, mammal, amphibian, reptile and fish population counts over 5 decades. The Living Planet report found habitat degradation and loss was the biggest threat to life. Wildlife, followed by overexploitation, invasive species, disease, climate change and pollution.
Yeah, all disappointing stuff that. Talking of which, Climate of the Party 16, the United Nations Biodiversity Conference, is ongoing in Colombia. It starts on the 21st of October. It will continue to the 1st of November 2024. Now, delegates from nearly every country on Earth are meeting to assess progress against national pledges to protect nature made at the previous COP15 summit on biodiversity in December 2022, where countries reached an historic agreement to protect 30% of Earth's land and seas by 2030. Now, the Kunming Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework is its official name. aims to halt and reverse biodiversity's decline by 2030. And for humans to live in harmony with nature by 2050 to deliver benefits essential for all people. Now, it has four main goals: increased conservation of ecosystems and species, resources used as sustainably as possible, more equal sharing of natural resources, and increased financial support for biodiversity protection. Although the 2022 framework was not legally binding, that sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Signatories committed to demonstrating progress towards meeting biodiversity targets. But recent analysis, surprise, surprise, suggests that most countries are failing to meet their targets to preserve nature. Key issues include the scale of ambition required in meeting the targets they've set, finance for biodiversity projects in poorer countries, and making sure profits from generic resources are shared fairly. All familiar stuff, eh?
As you know, we all have to recycle, but listen to this. As a nation, we are keen recyclers. Some 87% of us take the time to sort our rubbish each week, according to the waste charity RAP. But about 79% of us all still regularly throw away items into general waste which could be recycled. All in all, we wrongly send 9 billion items each year to landfill or incineration, which should go for recycling. This picture is getting worse. Household recycling rates in England have stagnated in recent years and last year dropped to 43%, the lowest level in a decade. In Wales, for comparison, recycling stands at 57%, and in Germany it is 68%.
Good old Germany.
I like this last story, Joe.
I'm doing the last one. No, you can't have it. Unblocktober. Residents are being urged not to pour fats, oils and grease down their sinks after a water firm spent £3 million fixing block drains. South West Water cleared 6,400 blockages across the region's network in 2023. About 75% of those blockages were caused by the combination of sanitary items and fatbergs. The national campaign called Unblocktober is underway to change people's kitchen and bathroom habits and improve the health of the UK's drains, sewers and water. Waterways, there you go.
We'll be right back.
The amazing late, great Jeff Beck there with a track called Big Block off Jeff Beck's Guitar Shop album. It's a cracker. All good stuff. You are, of course, listening to Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM every Saturday morning, talking about science in all its different forms. I've got RPG on the line, all being well.
Science.
Good morning, PG. Waiting in the wings. Oh, you're very quiet. What's he done to you?
Oh, we don't know.
Take that cue off. Hello? Oh, we've lost you. Where are you? This is what happens on live radio. Maybe I've not plugged you in properly. Is that better?
Hello?
Yes!
You're there.
Paddy's just...
You got me.
Yeah, we've got you. We're just demonstrating to Paddy here how things can go wrong when you're ringing people up and it's live. But we're not bothered, are we?
Oh.
Good morning, PG. What's caught your eye in the science news this week, then?
Well, I think one of the things you were talking about, processing waste, locally, they've just launched a consultation on future waste disposal in Sheffield. And they're talking about, over the next couple of years, introducing a different way of collecting things like sheet plastic, like plastic bags and things as a separate entity. So it's if you go to sheffield.gov and have a look on the waste site, then you should see the invite there to participate if you want to have your say about what should be collected and how it should be collected.
Have you actually been on that website, Paul? Because I got something through the door that telling you about information about your bin collections, but also about that consultation about a month ago. I went online and it said the consultation had ended.
Okay. Well, I got it through online, so as an update.
Oh, okay. We'll check that out.
But yes, I mean, Sheffield's apparently looking into the better way of handling waste. We've had a few consultations, I think, over how often different collections should be made. But this is about the content of what kind of things could be collected. So it's kind of interesting. And then I was sitting and thinking about going into space. Yeah, so looking at space and thinking about the oncoming demise of the International Space Station. In the next couple of years, it's going to be become defunct, and it's going to be destroyed by Elon Musk's SpaceX crew. But it's been in space and continually occupied since about 2000. So it's coming up to a quarter century lifespan of the International Space Station. And quite often you see these images of things like the space station in the massive void of space, and you think, well, crikey, there must be tiny little spaces. But an interesting thing that sort of came up on just having a look generally is that the International Space Station, if you look at it end to end, is about as broad as the front of Buckingham Palace.
Oh, right.
it's a lot bigger than you think, and I sort of looking at that, it's subdivided, obviously, so it's not like it's built like Buckingham Palace in a block. There are lots of tubes that have different functions, and also in the sort of background, I remember probably getting on for a couple of years ago talking about a new toilet that was going to be delivered, which had cost between £5 and £6 million to develop. And looking recently, I see they've still got problems. So apparently the urine processor has broken down. So they're having to store urine in some form out there in space. And the toilets that were made, obviously, we all sort of understand the earthly toilets, but then when you're weightless in space, it brings quite a dimension of things that you've got to look after. So apparently for solid waste, it goes into a bag which allows moisture and gas to escape from things. That's compacted as much as it will go. And it's launched into space on one of the delivery vehicles on re-entry to burn up in the atmosphere. So some of the wondrous sort of things out in space, you never know what you're going to get showered with, do you?
Well, you don't. Indeed.
But, but sort of looking beyond that, it's one of the things I was looking at. I think BBC did a thing about where are we going to go to in space next? And I sort of came across the sort of offspring of the International Space Station, which is going to be a similar project that's going to orbit the moon. And it's going to be called Gateway. So it's going to be a place for the Artemis missions that are going up to the moon. And it'll be a focal point for astronauts to stay in orbit around the moon rather than going down to the surface and coming back off the surface. It means that they've got a sort of a local floating resource. And it's part of the springboard to take us further into space. And one of the things that they're talking about with that is we talked, I think, only a few weeks ago about the unfurling of a massive solar power-generating sail in space, which is a really sort of complex piece of origami. So they send it up on a rocket and slowly it unfolds itself and becomes very large. Well, the array for the Gateway is said to be about the size of an American football field when it's unfurled. And it's going to be a source of energy, and it can be used for advancing into deep space. And what they do is, from the energy that's generated there, they excite xenon gas, and that's the propulsive force to send deep space ships.
Ooh.
So it's a thing, and favourite sort of quotes about Elon Musk is that he's got his sights set on Mars as being a place where we can reach and land. And in the news this week is that scientists somehow have discovered that there is some liquid water beneath the surface on Mars, collected somewhere. Don't know quite how they've done that, but there are so many probes going out now that we really are sort of exploring our radius of space that is sort of seeable. And I thought, well, it's really interesting. So I was sort of looking through the NASA website, and there's also a huge sort of raft of things that people can get involved in with NASA. So they're called citizen involvement, citizen science. And what you can do is you can choose from these different things. So you can search space for asteroids, and that's, they say, open to anybody with a smartphone or a laptop. You can look at the Eclipsing Binary Patrol, examine space telescope data to find rare pairs of stars for anybody with a smartphone or a laptop. Active asteroids we can look into. We can chase the bursts of gamma ray signals and help NASA to try and decode those. Cloud spotting on Mars, cool neighbours, backyard worlds like Jupiter. There's a huge raft of things which, if you go to science.nasa.gov, you can have a stroll through there and maybe become a space scientist.
Oh, you're sounding like Phil Muffett. You'll be doing out of a job. You won't come on next week now.
So it's kind of interesting, I think, to dig into that. And you think, oh gosh, I've got to be a qualified scientist to get into it. Well, you don't. And I think just looking through some of these projects, you start to see the width and the sort of depth of human endeavour into space. I mean, we talked about low Earth orbit activities where we're talking about building factories in space to undertake scientific experimentation or actual production. And there is a sort of race to land back on the moon, as we talked about, and things work or don't work. So I sort of look at the breadth of space and try and understand, get a grip on our position or what we are. And then you look at the mundane, and I was reading the Reddit string about the space toilet, and we're totally fascinated. Lots of people.
It must be your age, Paul, this toilet business. Paul's laughing at you now.
Yeah, well, I think it's, I mean, it is my age, yeah. But it's one of those things, you know, we're inquisitive about the most peculiar little sort of corners of science and endeavour. And I guess it sort of humanises space for a lot of people. You know, we all do it.
I know, indeed. And just going back before you go, Paul, we've just checked on the website. We think that consultation about the waste collection is live still, and it finished on the 4th of November. But helpfully for the council's website, it doesn't say what year. We think it's still live. So if you want to take part, go and do it before the 4th of November. All good stuff. Yeah. We've got a great track to play you out as well, Paul.
Ooh.
Space Oddity. Why not?
Okay.
Thanks, Paul. Speak Monday. Glory's Rock Show 1 till 3. Bye bye.
All right. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2.
Check ignition 1. And may God's love lift be off. With you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time
Bit of Space Oddity there by David Bowie. Great track. We played that because RPG was talking about all things space and a few other things as well. If you've just tuned in, you are, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. And guess who we've got in the studio? He's looking really worried now. Great piece of music that is, co-written by David Bowie as well, didn't you know? And we've got Paddy Vesey in the studio. Now, you may know Paddy because he's also a presenter at Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. He does The Backroom every Thursday evening, 6 till 7, and what a great show it is. Welcome, Paddy.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, you're on the wrong side of the desk. It's weird, isn't it?
I might be on the right side of the desk, depending which way you look at it.
But it's weird.
It is. I don't know. Yeah. I'm on a different microphone.
Different microphone. I'm not doing headphones. The deck. You're not in control.
I'm not in charge. Literally rocked up with a flat white.
I know, but thank you for coming to join us. And we're going to talk about your day job.
Oh, my day job.
And it's quite an interesting day job. And it's not something that everybody would consider, I don't think, as a career. So I'm really, really interested on lots of levels. So do you want to explain to the listeners what your current job role is?
Yeah, my current job role is that I'm a family psychotherapist at Sheffield Children's Hospital in the psychology department, working with young people and families with the impact of their physical health that's impacting on their kind of emotional well-being and mental health.
That's an interesting one. So you talked there about physical health impacting on mental health. So it's not mental health issues in isolation, as it were.
No, that's right.
Right, and so what other jobs have you done? Because I know you've worked at the NHS.
For as long as I can remember, to be honest. So I'm a mental health nurse by background. So I've worked in many different areas into older adult psychiatry, inpatient for young people, eating disorders, child and adolescent mental health services, a bit of forensic, pretty much most areas really of mental health over that time.
So, for me, I think it's a very difficult area of work. It's not for everybody at all. So, what made you choose that as your career path? And did you go straight into it?
No. Ah. No, I didn't. I was 30 when I went into thinking about training as a mental health nurse. So I had a complete change of career. Music was always my thing, but didn't have much of a career in music.
I'm not
playing stuff, but actually in terms of promoting stuff and things like that. But but I've always felt a connection with people. I've always felt like an interest in the mind and how to help and stuff. So yeah, I went to university as a mental health nurse for 3 years.
Where did you study? Sheffield?
Sheffield University, yeah.
Brilliant. And so as part of that, did you do a whole range of mental health, deal with a whole range of mental health issues, or did you go straight into one discipline?
From qualifying, I went into adult psychiatry on the inpatient wards at the Northern General at that time. I think at that time, you know, jobs were quite scarce, I would say.
Yeah,
More than they are now. But I always thought it was a good grounding in terms of psychiatry. But I always wanted to work with children and young people.
So, but you started in adults.
I did, yeah.
And is that older adults or younger adults?
Just younger adults. Well, yeah, 18 to 65, I would say.
And there's such a wide range of mental health issues. I mean, we do talk. We'll come on later, but and you know, people are willing to talk about mental health more now, aren't they? But
way
it's
more.
Still a big issue, isn't it? You know, physical health, to talk about physical health is a bit different sometimes to talking about mental health, I think.
I agree. I think, but with young people with, you know, chronic health conditions at a young age, such as, I don't know, type 1 diabetes or arthritis, having that as a young age and how that kind of impacts
on your mental health as well, your mental well-being. So my next question is going to be, how do you think the way that the NHS and in particular Sheffield Primary Care Trust deal with and treat mental health issues, how do you think that's changed over the years?
It's a very good question. We might actually have to have you back on. It's a very
good question. How long have we got?
I think I'm speaking from my own experience of working in it for 20 years. The differences I've noticed, I suppose, because I've worked with child adolescent for kind of most of that, is I would say back when I was working in CAMHS many years ago, the referrals were nowhere near as kind of high as now. And I think part of that, there's a lot of societal environmental issues which is impacting on mental health, and we have to be thinking about what's mental health and what's mental illness. So I think, you know, we all have mental health. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but you know, we can be affected by all kinds of things. The world's, you know, you could argue that it's a more difficult place to be, to as a young person to navigate that. So
yeah,
I think the impact in terms of depression and anxiety is something that people are having to deal with.
When you say CAMHS,
yeah, child and adolescent mental health services.
What do you think the demand for those services is now? Much higher.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah,
do you think it's got worse since COVID? Or
that's an interesting question, because I'm not sure we'll know that completely. It's interesting. There's been research around this, because there was a kind of narrative around this being, you know, people dealing with mental health for years and years and from the effects of COVID. But I would say that people had different experiences of COVID. Not everybody had a bad experience during the COVID time. Some people actually thought we had a bit of a break. We had a bit of a rest from life. So I think it's different for different people. So it's different. I would say it's difficult to know. What we do know is that eating disorders quadrupled during that time, for different reasons. So we know there is research around that bit. Yeah,
very interesting. So you talked very specifically there about mental health versus mental illness.
Yeah.
Do you want to just elaborate on what the key differences are?
Well, I suppose it's kind of thinking about what's neurological. You know, I think like, you know, psychosis and bipolar and things like that, and you know, depression to some extent. And I think anxiety is something that we all have. You know, we are anxious about stuff. I guess it depends on how much it impacts on functioning of your life. And actually, in thinking about young people now, the thing that they're quite anxious about is almost being told what to be anxious about sometimes. But I think like things like climate change, young people are quite anxious about, you know, thinking about, you know, this narrative that like you're not going to be able to buy a house like you used to be able to. And you've got all these kind of things that kind of young people are dealing with now. And I think, you know, the internet has... So the internet's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? And I think there is a connection, I think, with young people's mental health over the years in terms of social media, and, you know, how they use it. There's so many different messages. We listen to so many different things.
Do you think the fact that people have a very short attention span now, does that affect mental well-being?
I've got my phone here, right?
I know.
And why is it there? I don't know. Am I thinking about it? Probably because we're all attached to these things. We're all addicted to technology, to screens now, aren't we? So I think we're always need to move. I think we need to be entertained rather than finding our ways to entertain ourselves.
So we're always switching from one thing to another. It's a very interesting one.
And we seem to get bombarded with lots of headlines, don't we?
Yep.
As soon as you go on your browser, things are popping up. Things are popping
out of your control.
Things are popping up that you've already bought.
And generally, based
where you've been,
algorithms.
Algorithms.
So if you click on a story that you think, oh, I'm worried about the war, I'm worried about climate change, you click on it, and then you just get more and more and more of the same thing.
Absolutely. And if you're struggling with your mental health and you go on to an algorithm that tells you about something else and something else and something
else. You go down a rabbit hole, don't you?
You can go down a rabbit hole. So I think it's about how do young people protect themselves to some extent Very interesting. Or also adults, I would say.
So anxiety, you think, is a big issue then for the younger?
Anxiety is a big issue, but I think it's a bigger issue. It's a kind of wider issue. Like I said, like the worrying about, you know, climate change, worrying about how they're going to get on the property ladder when they're older. Lots of different things, you know. Yeah, so many different messages.
Another interesting one, you've talked about eating disorders, which I'm very interested in, actually. But the other one I'm reading more about, young people now are not necessarily drinking alcohol, but they are more likely to take drugs.
Well, maybe that's... I read something that there's 25% of 18 to 25-year-olds don't drink alcohol, which is the most in history.
Yeah.
And people have like, what the theories around that. I don't know about the drug stuff. I think, I'm not sure about that. But I think part of that, my thoughts around that, is that young people are more worried about, you know, when people go on a nights out, when before phones and social media, you go on a night out, nothing's filmed, nothing's photographed.
No, it's true.
Now, people are so worried. People are connected, all kind of people over the internet. You know, as soon as you get home, all your stuff's over Facebook and you've got no control over that. So there's something about, I think there's something about control and when people go and alcohol and stuff. But also there's a thing about healthy living. There is a whole thing about clean living for young people. And you need to be healthy, and you know, alcohol is not part of that. And they'll go to the gym and everything like that. So there is a different change in culture.
Interesting. So the eating disorders one, that's an interesting one. Is that an image thing, social media again, about people wanting to look a certain way?
It's not. It's a trigger, but it's not. The thing is with eating disorders, especially having kind of anorexia, is that when you treat anorexia, you don't think about the causes. It could be lots of things. We don't think about the cause. We think about how to recover. I think social media and image and stuff, that can trigger, but it's not a cause of anorexia.
Right, interesting. Mm. Yeah. So do you think people are more aware of mental health issues now and more willing to talk about them? I think they are, but maybe
I think it's a huge push. I mean, even to the royal family where they're talking about mental health. And that never used to happen, did it? So I think right up to everybody's talking about mental health awareness, is we're probably more aware than we've probably ever been. I suppose one of the... You know, and I think that's really, really important. But also, we need the resources to meet that. And I think, you know, mental health, people can... Not everybody needs therapy to deal with mental health. Some people can find other ways of doing that and looking after themselves and try. There's lots of things that we can do. But I think also talking to people is, you know, there's a whole thing about, you know, when you ask somebody if you're okay, which we just do naturally but then we don't ask again necessarily.
No.
So apparently there was a whole kind of promotion thing about like ask twice, ask a second time, and then you might get a different answer.
Because mental illness is very complicated and mental health issues are very complicated and they affect different people in different ways. What I was going to say to you, do you think there's a difference in the way males, females, young people, old people deal with talking about mental health?
Well, I think in terms of thinking about gender, just kind of men, I think men are talking more. I think they're having these groups, these men's groups, they're having in pubs to make it all kinds of ways to get men to talk. And, you know, in terms of my work, you know, I think it's important that dads talk as well. Dads have a voice. I think men have always been a thing like, you know, we don't talk about our feelings, our emotions, but actually over the years, I think it's been pushed. Men are really kind of coming more forward with that.
To be honest.
But also, but in terms of kind of eating disorders, you know, men, that's increasing in terms of that as well.
I read, this was a while back, about this obsession with exercising, almost to an nth degree, and if you missed your exercise you'd get very nervous and stuff, but you'd overeat and then exercise to try and compensate, and you'd almost be in that cycle. And I think that's a very interesting, that's a modern, almost a modern thing.
Well, look at COVID. We were told to just, because we couldn't do anything else, we were literally told to go and exercise, and that's all we could do. So there was, people got into that, but got into really big, into a big way. Yeah. And in some sense, it was really good for some people, but in other ways, people became very obsessive.
You know, we haven't specifically named dementia and Alzheimer's. I mean, I'm reading that that's probably one of the biggest killers now because we've got an ageing population.
Because we're getting older.
Because we're getting older, yeah. But it's a very difficult disease, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I've worked in older adult with dementia, in nursing homes, in on wards and things like that. It's a very difficult thing for families to deal with. And as we get older, we're living longer. It's increasing. Obviously, that's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, more and more. There's some research just started on the link between air pollution and dementia,
right.
Particulate matter. That's another. But obviously, these things take years, don't they, to work out why we're getting all these more cases? Is it just how it is? Or is something triggering it? Same with cancer in young people. They're trying to put it down to diet. Mm. Maybe diet, ultra-processed food.
Look at neurodiversity, ADHD and autism. You know,
yeah.
The increase in people, you know, going for assessments around that.
Wow.
And more diagnosed.
So you clearly found your job very rewarding.
Yeah,
it's difficult.
It's difficult, of course, because it's emotional. You're dealing with people's stories, but it's also thinking about. I feel like I'm always hopeful. I think that's the word I always kind of have in my job, because actually I've seen recovery. I've seen people get better when people have been really, really, really,
really
poorly, really unwell. Even around kind of, you know, self-harming or suicidal ideation, things like that. And people do find a way they want to live. And, you know, so people do recover in terms of anorexia as well. You know, it can be treated
and it is treated,
you know, lots of things. So I see hope. I see it.
It's amazing. My mum was bipolar. And so I've got a lot of experience with that. And, you know, sometimes if you're not used to dealing with mental health, you know, you've got to remember that people alienate people because they're ill and they don't understand, you know, they're not in the right frame of mind. But I found with my mum over the years, the different drugs were used on her, and she eventually found a drug that suited her. And she was like a normal woman. And you just cannot explain to people the difference that a bit of a chemical could make to somebody's life and their well-being. Yeah. And I find that interesting. And is drugs... Modern drugs, are they ever developing, are they? Is that's part of the therapy, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be. It doesn't have to be, though. I think, you know, yes, antidepressants are kind of used quite a lot. But I think also, you know, talking about stuff, everybody's different, aren't they? I think it depends on kind of, what people need, what can help. Medication can be a part. But it's not everything.
Yeah, I could carry on talking to you forever. So we might have to bring you back and let you talk in, if you've got time one Saturday.
Sure.
If we've got a slot that you come in and talk in about specific different bits of mental health. But we want to get your track in.
Yeah.
So I won't talk too much. But obviously, you've got to have a good work-life balance, haven't you, because of the job you're in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know you're into music, and obviously you're a presenter here, so you can tell us why you enjoy it so much. It's a big switch-off, isn't it?
Why I love music so much. Well, I need to come back for that one. I mean, it's always been, that's my obsession, my kind of, music's like my football kind of thing, you know. The bands are my support, who I support, and my show on this show, on The Back Room, shameless plug, Thursday 6 till 7.
It's very good, it is too.
Thank you. We have loads of great guests. You know, we had Sherlock's on this week. We had Johnny Lloyd from Tribes as well. He was on. We have guests pretty much most weeks. But it's really, really important to kind of put out new artists because the music industry is a difficult place to navigate.
Yeah.
Either touring, making music, and I'm a big supporter of grassroots venues. I'm a big supporter of people kind of getting their music out there, and radio has, and always will be, I hope, a place that's where it's going to happen. And that's why it's so important and I'm passionate about.
But also music is, for your mental well-being, to be engrossed in whatever your thing is, whether it's reading, whether it's music, it's really good to switch your brain off and stop worrying about.
Completely, music's completely therapeutic.
And on that note, we are gonna play a track you've chosen, a track by Tom A. Smith.
Yeah.
It's called Little Bits from his EP3, I believe, 6th of October 2023 release. Does
That's
that sound right?
Yeah,
I've done my homework.
He's a young artist. Elton John's all over him. You know, he's been bigged up, really, really good. He's from Sunderland. And I love this track.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, Paddy.
Thanks
Here
so
we
much.
Go. Bye-bye.
Cheers. A little bit longer, drive a little bit further, push a little bit stronger.
and out of all these bits, and believe you can break through. It's impossible. I've heard that said about a million times before. It's beyond me. But the fact remains that they probably want more. In the distance, there is a goal that you can achieve. Break down bit by bit.